We can get started with insurance.
Yeah, but
all right.
All righty. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Welcome. This is the Tuesday, October 9th, 2018 meeting of the Central Marin Sanitation Agency Board of Commissioners. Would you all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Kate, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Diane First.
Here.
Michael Borstein.
Yes, ma'am, here.
Tom Gaffney.
Here.
Mary Beth Bushy.
Here.
Dean DiGiovanni.
Here.
Wait just a minute. Oh, no.
Okay, and Danny Homer has not arrived.
Thank you. All right, first up is agenda item 3, open time for public participation. This is the time we have set aside for members of the public to speak on anything not on tonight's agenda. You will have 2 minutes. Would anybody like to speak? Seeing none, we will move on. I have been asked to move something up in the agenda. That is agenda item number 9, the discussion of debt issuance planning. If there are no objections to moving that up, we will hear that now, and then after that, we will continue on with the remaining items starting with 4. Okay, thank you.
Second.
Any member of the public like to speak? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great, thank you. Agenda item number 9, debt issuance planning. Jason.
Thank you, Chair First. So as you know, the board approved a 5-year revenue plan program earlier in the year, and that revenue program was built into the agency's fiscal year 19 budget, our 10-year financial forecast. It includes a few elements. One is a 3.5% average total EDU rate increase each fiscal year for the next 5 years, and that's been communicated to the GAPA member agencies. And it also includes 2 debt issuances, one in fiscal year 20 and the second one in fiscal year 23 to cover some of the more sizable and significant capital improvement programs. The first issuance planned for right now for FY20 is to for the design and construction and support services for a new cogeneration system and also replacement of our 3 dewatering centrifuges along with several other minor projects. So in the revenue plan, what we initially kind of discussed was and presented to the board was that we would convene the Finance Committee in the springtime, develop actual a plan for issuing the debt, what would be the projects in the plan, what was the total funding need for the plan, what was the term for the issuance, you know, what the cost would be for the financial advisor and the bond and disclosure council based on their proposals, and several other type of planning activities. So we'd prepare that, the Finance Committee, bring that to the board, and if it was approved, then we'd move forward with, you know, debt issuance. So that was the plan, and recently Ken, our admin services manager, and I met with our financial advisor, Sarah Hollenbeck from PFM in the city, and she briefed us on the current, you know, tax-exempt municipal bond rates and what the projections are for those to increase in the future over the next year. And so we talked to her about our revenue plan and the debt issuance, all the things I just mentioned. And she said, you guys may want to consider talking to your board about issuing debt sooner than later so you can take advantage of the lower interest rates before their projected increase. So we thought that made sense. So we scheduled a subsequent conference call with Sarah and with Sean Tierney, the bond counsel. We talked about it. And we asked Sarah and her staff if they could provide us some supporting information, which is in the PowerPoint presentation attached to the staff reports. And Ken and I looked at that and thought it's probably advantageous to, you know, CMSA, the JPA members, and our constituents that we consider issuing the debt sooner than later. So the request really is to move up the process about 6 months than what we anticipated. So that was the staff presentation. I could answer any questions you may have. If this was approved, then we'd probably convene the Finance Committee later this month, figure out all these planning details, and bring some type of a planning recommendation to the board, maybe January, maybe February.
Yes, I'm going on memory here, so it might be wrong. Wasn't there an option, or what isn't the issuance of the debt just authorization for it, and then we don't have to actually spend it until we need it? Or do we actually issue all the debt and spend all the money and start incurring the interest immediately for the entire amount?
So, and Ken can help me with this. So if we went forward, we'd issue the debt, prepare all the bond documents, either go through a competitive sale or negotiated sale. We receive the proceeds. So those would be, you know, held in a separate investment account. And then we could, you know, discretion of the board, reimburse ourselves for any of the cost of those projects that we've incurred to that point in time. And then we had started having to make the debt service payments, I believe, you know, begin the next fiscal year.
Okay, so it's a lump sum. We're going to do it all.
Everything that would be in the plan.
In the plan. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Not sure, but we were going to. The plan is to do two separate issuances.
One, oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
One like in 2020, and another one's in 2025.
Right now, we're thinking 23, which would be the last year of our current 5-year plan. So the revenue increases in the current plan wouldn't provide, you know, revenue for debt service for a second issuance. So that's what we talked about.
Okay.
And the thought would be then that in the, you know, end of the fourth year of the current plan, we'd start to work with the Finance Committee to develop the agency's next multi-year plan. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we'd have a better picture of what the capital program looked like, if there are changes in regulatory requirements, other factors that affect, you know, the content and scale of the capital program.
What the interest rates look like as well.
Okay, yeah. Tom had a question?
Yeah. When we did the finance plan, it was the option of either one debt issuance or two. And I was hoping that, like most capital plans, there are delays. And so, and I, as a finance committee, we're going to take that into consideration. I was hoping we could do it in one smaller debt issue than we showed in the finance plan because of project delays. And so I think we'll review the financial consequences of issuing early, because yeah, we save interest, but we pay interest sooner. And the rule on a bond issue is that you have to have the reasonable expectation to spend the money within 3 years. So if you issue debt, you generally need to spend it.
I would agree with that concept.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the Treasury rules, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, on that topic, we had a challenging but fortunate situation in our 2006 bond issuance. We I'll make this quick because I can talk about it for a long time. We what we did is, because the member agencies were going through Prop 218, we designed the debt program really kind of to initiate a year in advance so we could get, you know, our debt service needs incorporated into the Prop 218 process, because they were going through 5-year increases. So we had a conceptual cost estimate for this big, you know, wet weather proof program of, you know, 40-something million, and we bundled everything also. It was like a $58 or $9 million issuance. So we issued the debt, we got the proceeds, and then various things happened, but then we had the actual bid opening for the job a year later, year and a half later, and the low bid, who we awarded to, was $7.5 million less than the amount that we had in the debt issuance. We had all this big pool of bond proceeds left over. And then during those years, it was 2006-07, where interest rates were really good. LAIF was like 5 or 6%. We accumulated like, you know, $7 to $8 million in interest earnings, which were bond proceeds. So once we finished our big project, we had $13 million more than we anticipated. So we started moving all kinds of maintenance type projects into the CIP so we could spend the bond proceeds. But the intent was over 3 years, but it took us about 7 years to spend all the extra money.
So it's the reasonable expectation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that we want to be borrowing money to pay for maintenance.
It was maintenance, there are activities capital, like replacement of a pump,
yeah,
capital expenditures that could be capitalized. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, maintenance as in just ongoing, just repairs.
Okay.
Well, you know, if you think about our capital improvement program, it's a lot of replacements. Yeah. And, you know, a definition could be it's O&M. But there are considerations about the amount of the replacement to consider it capital. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I believe that everything in our CIP, whether it's a replacement or maintenance or whatever, it's a capital improvement. And so we have a lot of flexibility. We've got a lot of projects that come and go. But anyway, that's going to be a consideration of the Finance Committee, is selling bonds too early, then we got to pay the interest. In our district, we were going to have a $60 million bond issue, and we issued $30 million, and it took us 4 years to spend the 30, so we were really happy we did that.
The only comment I'd like to add to it is that small changes in interest rates can equate to millions of dollars over the life of the debt. Yeah. This table that they provided to us shows...
Where's that, Ken? Which one?
Page 5 of the... It's the very last page. The very last page. It shows 335 in March of 19 and 350 in September of 19. So, at least what it shows here, then 356. So it looks like it really starts climbing maybe... but by the end of 19, so we might want to consider anyway. We can talk about this in the Finance Committee, of course.
Do that, yeah.
You know,
the road to failure of financial advisors is predicting interest rates. Many financial advisor has crashed on the rocks on that one, but this is Bloomberg, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Bloomberg, yeah.
They were predicting that interest rates were going to start increasing. Believe me, for 10 years. And they kept drifting lower until about a year and a half ago or something like that. And then they finally started to go up.
Right, that's correct.
Okay, any other questions at this point? All right, would any member of the public like to speak to this? Seeing none, we'll bring it back. And you are asking for direction at this point?
That's correct.
All right. We know that this will come back to the Finance Subcommittee. So I would lean towards simply referring this to the Finance Committee to work through.
Okay.
But suggesting that we are open to suggestions to take advantage of the lower interest rates before they possibly go up. Would that be enough of a direction if the rest of the...
That's actually what you're asking for, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So... does anybody want to make a motion about that? I guess we don't even really need a motion, just casual direction. Is everybody on board with that? We refer it to the Finance Committee. Yeah.
And then we bring it back to the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll plan to convene the committee sometime end of October for our first meeting.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you, Campbell. Appreciate you staying.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to our regularly scheduled agenda. Agenda item number 4, the consent calendar. There are two changes to the consent calendar. First off, under 4E, we have an updated schedule at our seats. I presume there's also one in the back for members of the public.
Can I mention what was on here real
quick? Sure.
So this is the agency's standard investment report. And what we've been talking about recently is that we need to have a much more accurate ongoing projection of what capital revenues, expenses, and the beginning and ending balance of the capital reserves are on an ongoing basis. So we constructed this attachment to the investment report that shows what's happened in the current month and what's happened year to date. So it shows the revenues for the restricted capital reserve, the unrestricted capital reserve, and the expenses. And then it shows at the bottom, how much is in the approved CIP, how much we've spent to date, and what the balance in the current CIP is in terms of projects. So on here, you can see that we've spent about $230,000 on capital so far this year.
That's the second number from the bottom.
Yeah. And the reason this is revised is we had, you know, we were kind of working on versions of thoughts. We had one that made sense. I met with actually Tom and Michael yesterday. We started walking through it in little detail, and we pointed out some things weren't as clear as we thought, so we made some revisions to it, just so it's a little more readable and understandable. So I appreciate the feedback, Michael and Tom, on that.
Thank you. Okay, so that's one change. The other change is a small editing change in the minutes. If I'm not mistaken, it's on page 3 of 5, towards the bottom, where it discusses the I's for a decision that was made on the compensation policy. Mm-hmm. Tom Gaffney was not at that meeting. It was Doug Kelly. So replace Gaffney with the name Kelly.
And since I wasn't at that meeting, I have to abstain from the minutes.
Got it. Okay.
And we have 4, so we have enough.
All right. So the purpose of the consent calendar is to pass items that are routine in nature or have been discussed previously. These items, number 4A through 4K, with those two changes that we just discussed, will be passed in one motion, and any member of the public, staff, or the board may remove an item. Tom, did you want to remove
something? I'd like
something?
To remove A.
Okay, we can vote on that separately.
So I move...
Well, hold on. Is there any member of the public who would like to remove anything? See none? Okay. Let's take 4A first. Would you like to discuss it or just simply vote on it separately?
Just move it on separately.
Okay.
I move 4A.
Thank you. There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? One abstention? Tom. Thank you. All right. Under for 4B through 4K, do I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. That passed unanimously. All right. Moving on to agenda item number 5, a public hearing for the proposed compensation ordinance 2018-1, entitled An Ordinance of the Central Marin Sanitation Agency Board of Commissioners Adjusting Commissioner Compensation. Before we hear from Jason, I did want to mention that we got a letter from a member of the public who is objecting to the proposed compensation ordinance. This person is a resident of Larkspur, and he says, while the efforts of board members are valuable and some adjustments may be warranted, the proposed more than doubling combined with the expansion of compensated functions appears extreme, unjustified, and unreasonable on its face. Further, it reinforces the narrative that special district spending is unaccountable and out of control. Please reconsider the proposed ordinance. I just wanted to point out that we did discuss this at our last meeting, and the number that it was arrived at was the same figure that the Nevada Sanitary District uses to compensate their board members. The expansion to include certain committee meetings is also comparable to many other similar agencies, and this would put us pretty much in the middle, not the highest, not the lowest, but pretty much in the middle, which was the gist of the conversation last month. That being said, Jason, I will turn it over to you.
I have sort of a late-breaking issue.
Oh.
I didn't realize or hadn't fully understood that the limit on the other meetings was 6 per month. And that seems a little high to me. So that our constituents could quite justifiably say that our monthly compensation could be as high as 6 times 220. And that's a really big number. And so I was thinking that maybe we should trim that 6 back. I don't know that we've ever had 6 meetings.
Probably never close. Right?
Never close.
No, I mean, maybe, I think just one meeting a month.
We have one, actually.
No, we have committee. There might be a committee meeting one month and a board meeting one month, but that's about it.
What about CASA? Do you reimburse people for CASA? I think that's in the ordinance.
That's eligible for the stipend. So if a board member went to CASA, say, for 2 days, they could, you know, request the stipend for each of those days. And that 6 days, that's authorized in the Sanitary District Act. So that's right from the naming legislation.
But it's, you're talking limited. About the thought, gee, they can get six times that every month,
yeah,
when in fact we never do that.
Right, and yeah. It just creates an impression that's not accurate. I would think that two would be... what do you guys do at Ross Valley?
We have six.
Six?
I think six is allowed in the statute, isn't it?
That's correct.
It's in the...
I mean, if the board wanted to, once we get to the board policy, you could change the board policy and limit it from six to another number.
Yeah.
It just can't be more than 6 days of service.
Oh, am I on the next one? I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
Turn the stage. Go ahead.
Diane, did you have to open the public hearing?
Well, I said it's a public hearing.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, consider it open. Yes.
Yeah. Let's see, the previous one I'm reading got adopted, the $100 a day per diem, was in 1987, and that was 21 years ago, and it hasn't been adjusted.
31 years.
Ooh. 1.05 to the 31st power. So
that would be 400. We calculated that last time. It was like $465 could be the maximum stipend, okay, if the board, you know, took advantage of that, you know, law that passed 2000, had a 5% increase since their last, you know, approved increase. That would be 1987 for us times 31 years.
See, this is so typical. This is the thing where, you know, you leave things and don't do anything, and then when you get it back to semblance of reality, it's a gigantic jump, as opposed to, that happens the most in connection fees, where nobody pays any attention to them, and then they're way too low. Anyway.
You know, in the ordinance, there's no reference to the 6 days of service, so I think the ordinance is okay.
Okay.
I think we can address that if you guys desire in the board policy number two, okay, which is the next item.
Okay, so was there anything you wanted to discuss about this item?
No, I think you covered everything.
Okay.
That was discussed at the last meeting.
All right, I'd like to open it up for public input. Would any member of the public like to speak to this item? Seeing none, bring it back for discussion or a motion to approve.
So you close the public hearing?
I will. Close the public hearing. Thank you.
Is this the second reading of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, it is the second.
So we talked about this a little bit at the last meeting. Has a, I think state law requires cities to have two readings, in sanitation districts and counties have two readings, but a sanitary district only has to have one hearing. So in discussions last time, the board said, well, this, it's actually a open discussion item now, so we'll consider that the first time it's been presented. And then he gave his direction to post a summary of the ordinance in the IJ, which is above and beyond what's required in the Sanitary District Act. So we did post a summary of the ordinance in advance. And that was last Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It was in the IJ.
So the our JPA specifies our administrative procedure. And we could pick, like, we could have picked a county sanitation district. Mm-hmm. And when Larkspur was here, we could have picked a general law city, or we could have picked a sanitary district. And I believe we picked a sanitary district.
That's correct. Yeah.
So those are the procedures, because mm-hmm. we all have different procedures, so mm-hmm. you've got to pick one. And we picked the sanitary district.
Right, but in the interest of transparency, we are discussing it over two meetings. So I think the
and
spirit of the that's efforts right. to be transparent and have it over two meetings, giving the public the opportunity in two meetings to discuss it.
That's excellent. That. We all agree on that.
All right. So, if there's no further discussion, would anybody like to make a motion?
I just have one point of follow-up on the comment from Commissioner Gaffney regarding you let things sit for such a long time, then when you catch up, there is quite a jump. Is there any way that we can sort of revisit this on a biannual basis or something? Just to sort of feel out so it's not a 110% increase.
You know, that's a great idea. We could actually add that language into policy number two, that this will be brought back to the board
every two or three years,
whatever you guys want.
That's a good idea.
And that'll trigger staff to have it on the schedule, and we can always bring it back, and you guys can consider if you want to do it or not.
And then we don't have to adjust it. We just talk about it.
Exactly.
In RVSD, it's been going up every single year. And this last year, if I remember correctly, we said, regardless of what our ordinance says, we're not giving us.
We that. Changed it. We changed the ordinance. It was going up automatically. We finally said, why is it going up? Where is that? And it was buried. It was, we took the $100 times 5% a year, and it went up over $300.
So where are you now?
314.
314 per meeting.
Yeah.
So which includes subcommittee meetings, ad hoc committee?
It includes one meeting per day.
I don't know if it includes ad hoc meetings.
No, I didn't.
It doesn't. It just includes.
It does.
It does include ad hoc.
Okay. Thanks. So.
We try to do all of the meetings in one day if we can do HR and finance.
But I don't see what we're supposed to do. Adoption of ordinance. Is that the. I move adoption of ordinance 2018. Is that the.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? That passed unanimously. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item number six, which is the approval of the revised board policy related to compensation for agency officials. So, Jason, this is the one where you said we might want to adjust the maximum number of days per month that could be compensated.
Yeah, that's correct. So attached to the staff report is board policy number two with the revisions in it. So we, just to walk through what we did, we changed the $100 per day service to $225. It used to say that the board could adjust that by board resolution, which is not authorized in the health and safety code. It has to be by ordinance, as we learned last month. And then we included at the bottom item number two, which is standing at ad hoc board committee meetings. And we could... Under item four on page two, it says the number of days for which a commissioner receives a daily stipend will not exceed 6 days in the calendar month or state law, whichever is less. So that could change.
All right. Anybody
want to
pipe in on that one?
I don't. In all the years I've been hanging around here, I don't recall ever seeing more than really one meeting a month, but I could see that if something...
Well, when the finance committee meets.
Well, it's the finance committee. So they meet once every few months.
Yeah, but then there would be two.
There would be two meetings.
Yeah.
So it's...
Where is the language?
In my mind...
It's on page two of two.
Yeah.
In
my mind...
Paragraph four. The second page of the red line version.
I mean, like...
Page two.
For you, Michael, if you're on the finance committee, right?
Yes.
So one, this meeting, and then North Bay Watershed Coalition. That's you represent.
I was just told I actually get paid for that. I didn't.
I'm just saying, that's three.
That's
three. So I think that's sort of the max. Maybe give a buffer of four. I'd be comfortable with lowering that to four.
Because remember, there might be other projects that come up. For instance, the ad hoc JPA committee was meeting monthly.
Yeah. And you could be on the finance committee and the.
Yep.
You could have.
And there was a lot of work.
You could have our co-gen go down, and for some, it could happen. And we could have to have an emergency call of a board. I mean, it could conceivably happen.
Sure.
Not that it's a big deal either way, but it's. I don't think the public, my hunch, is the public wouldn't complain. If you have a meeting, it's usually multiple hours. It's not for this, but...
For all meetings on a given day. Okay.
I recognize the public perception could read into, you know, 6, that's 12, 13.
That's a lot of money.
That we would ever, you know, if we really got pressed to go to 6 meetings in a month. But, the reality is we probably never get there. If we want to set a limit, I'd be comfortable.
Yeah.
So, do you have a recommendation? I think 3.
Dean just said 4. You're saying 3?
I think 3 would be okay.
I think it's important to have a buffer zone in there.
4 is the, I don't care, but...
I could go for either.
4.
4 to 5.
Okay, let's do 4.
4.
I mean, and there are 4 weeks in a month, so it's, you know, a meeting a week. I mean, that sounds...
And that would be 8. That would be $900.
Yeah, it keeps us under $1,000. So that, yeah, that... Yeah, that sounds good.
All right.
Did you want to add, like, say, in item 5, where the board will revisit, you know, the daily stipend amount every 2 years, every 3 years?
Not even the... Just the whole compensation policy.
Yeah, 2 years.
Oh, okay. Just the policy, sure. Okay.
I think that's a good idea, Dean.
Okay.
So what,
policy.
Like every 3 years? Is that good?
I would every say two.
Every other year.
That's just,
it's every other
year. Were we on any kind of a schedule? I know this is not the first time we've looked at this in my tenure, which is starting to...
I think, I think that we... had the whole board policy manual before the board in 2015.
I think it was 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just to present it to the board, and I think, you know, we went through the policies, and there may have been some minor changes, but I don't think there's any change to this policy.
And previous to that, when had it been?
Well, it was 2010, the first time that we drafted all the policies in response to a grand jury recommendation.
So 10, 14, and 18. So we're doing it roughly every 4 years.
Do you, like, review all the policies? Do you have a calendar for review of all the policies?
Well, we review all of agency policies. It cycles. We review a policy manual each year. And we have 3. We have financial policies, personnel policies, and administrative policies. So every 3 years, we're reviewing a manual to bring it back to the board. I don't necessarily review all the board policies, but I think it's a good idea to take a look at them.
Mm-hmm. But do you have a tickler that says, gee, this one comes up?
Yeah,
something like
I just have kind of a, you know, electronic, you know, spreadsheet that I add, you know, various items to the board calendar.
So for the compensation policy for agency officials, should we add a number 5 that this policy shall be reviewed about biannual?
Looked at, yeah, review.
Okay, we could definitely add that.
Yeah, so you could, in consultation with the chair, review it and say, I don't think we need to make any changes this year, put it on the consent agenda, and roll on.
Sure, definitely.
Okay. All right, with the changes that we've discussed...
Okay, let me call for public comment. Okay. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to this?
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you. Bring it back. Go for it,
Marybeth. Adding section 5 regarding this policy being reviewed biannually and changing the number of days in section 4 from 6 to 4. I move item 5.
6.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
If you like, once I revise this, I could send you guys a copy of the whole manual. There's only 6 policies in it. That way you just have a copy of it you can stash away somewhere. It's on the website, too, if you can go to the website.
Oh, I've been looking at it all weekly.
No, you need to do next month. We need to have a quiz on it.
How many days serves your eligible stipend?
Alrighty, that was agenda item 6. So let's move on to 7, the cogeneration system maintenance project agreement. Jason?
Thank you. So this is a service agreement between CMSA and Peterson Power Systems to to perform some periodic maintenance on the cogeneration engine. Now, you know, the cogeneration system has a preventive maintenance schedule for all the different, you know, assets associated with it. Regarding the engine, you probably notice every once in a while that we have information in the consent calendars, MPDS process, and maintenance activity report that we have a 2,000-hour maintenance activity, which is changing spark plugs, air filters, and lubricants for the engine. Then, at less frequency, we have a top-end overhaul. Then we have a little less frequency, we have a top-end and bottom-end overhaul. Then we have a major overhaul. So in January of 2016 was the last major preventive maintenance, and that was the top-end and bottom-end overhaul, which was wrapped up in around March or April of that year. So this is the meeting the schedule recommended by the manufacturer based on number of run hours for the top-end overhaul. In addition to that, the contractor will replace the turbochargers on the engine and a gasket seal for the main bearings. And the top-end overhaul has a lot of different components to it, but essentially the contractor is going to be replacing cylinder heads, measuring various components on the top end to make sure that they're within the manufacturer's, you know, specifications, replacing thermocouples, spark plugs, assembling everything, starting it up, testing it, and then adjusting the governor to make sure that the emissions profiles for under natural gas operation and biogas operation meet the our air district permit requirements. So if this is approved, the contractor, Peterson Power Systems, will have 90 days from the contract execution to finish the work, but 25 days from on-site work. So that gives them a little window on both ends so they can, you know, purchase the long lead time items and they get delivered here, then they can start the on-site work. So this is, so the engine will be down, so we'll be buying MCE power for that 25, you know, day period. So that PG&E bill you'll see in our disbursement register is going to be quite high. And the reason that we do it during usually the fall and winter time is because we don't, even though we're using a little more power here due to rain events and more equipment being online, is that we don't have the peak period time of use charges and the peak period demand charges, which are pretty significant.
During the summer.
Those are from beginning of May to, I think, the beginning of October. So we schedule all the maintenance usually around, you know, December, January, so it's done before the beginning of the peak demand period, so we avoid those charges. For example, like the peak demand charge is like $17 a kilowatt. Ooh. So if we have 700 kilowatt demand in a 15-minute time period through the whole month, one 15-minute spike of 700, it's that time $17 or $18 a kilowatt. So it might be, you know, $10,000 charge just for that 15-minute time of use. So we avoid that part of the schedule when we do our
maintenance work. Thank you.
Yeah.
We don't have a little generator, not in the middle of one, you know, and tap the natural gas system and avoid those peaks. That's a killer. Have we ever paid that peak?
You know, once in a while during the peak period, there may be, say, the PG&E power goes out, so the cogen system shuts down. In the current, you know, the old interconnection agreement, we couldn't run the cogen when the power's out, so we have to start up the diesel emergency generator. But, for example, say it didn't start up, and we had to troubleshoot it. It took, like, 45 minutes, and that's happened sometimes. Then we have 45 minutes of peak power demand use. And,
so we do have a diesel backup generator to avoid peaks, if possible. Is that what
if there's power outages,
Okay, any other questions?
You know, a number I've never seen before is that our cogen saves us over $1 million a year. I knew it saved us a lot of money, but I didn't realize it was that much. That's significant.
Yeah.
Did everybody else know that?
Mm-hmm.
You did know that.
Yeah, the last meeting we discussed it pretty
much. It was one line item in the annual green business report. We talked about the value of cogen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But you weren't at that meeting, Tom.
I was not there. No, I had.
Hands down.
I caught up.
The only business operating in Marin County on nearly 100% renewable energy. I mean, it is amazing what we're doing. $1 million is great, but...
But also the percentage of how much we're...
Yeah, and we're burning methane. You know, I mean, it's just, it's the most fantastic operation, but
We deserve a best of Marin.
Yeah. We do. Well, plus we're handling food waste at the same time.
That's exciting.
Well, we all agree that's significant.
That's why it's exciting to get to number 8 next dinner.
Yeah, all right. Let's finish number 7. Okay. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to agenda item number 7? All right. Bring it back. May I have somebody please move to approve the 2018 cogeneration system maintenance project agreement with Peterson Power Systems?
I move that we approve the 2018 cogeneration system maintenance project agreement with Peterson Power Systems and authorize the general manager to sign it.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Unanimous.
Great,
moving
you.
On, agenda item number 8, cogeneration system pre-design evaluation agreement. Jason.
Thank you, Chair Hurst. So this is a project that is comprised of tasks from three other agency projects, one being a scheduled for this fiscal year cogeneration technology evaluation. So that's, you know, a task. And then there's the pre-design for the selected cogeneration system, which is a task in next year's CIP scheduled out. And then there are a series of tasks in our renewable energy expansion program that we bundled into this. So I work with Kroll Engineers, and we designed the scope of work to capture all the tasks from these three different projects. And you may be asking, well, why are you doing these three different projects instead of one at a time? And the reason is that we have a Clean Water State Revolving Fund under the Green Project Reserve category that has a value of $667,000, where $500,000 of that is principal forgiveness. It's essentially a grant. So when we applied for this, we designed a project called the Renewable Energy Expansion Project. And that had several projects from the master plan that just was wrapped up last month. It had several activities from our PG interconnection agreement, including the power sale negotiations with Marin Clean Energy. And then in addition to those, there was environmental assessment. There was, you know, air district, you know, interface and assessment of emission requirements for a new system. There was financial modeling and analysis. There was development of a project roadmap with all the different, you know, recommended activities and findings and a project schedule and cost and other actions, and then summarizing all of that into a final report. So that was part of the renewable expansion program. Then we started looking a little closer. We said, well, we have to have a project to do all those assessments for. And from the other tasks, we didn't have a selected project. So looking at that, we said, well, how about we just pull those into this new project so we have the funding for it through the loan and grant, and then do the technology assessment from this year in the pre-design, and then we'll do the air permitting and the CEQA and the financial analysis on that selected system after the pre-design evaluation, where we have pre-design construction costs and net present value, things like that. So we bundle the project together, and we have a scope of work and a fee and a schedule bundled to one of our professional service agreements with Crowlo Engineers. And if the board approves the contract, which has a value of about $218,000, 75% of it will be refunded through, you know, the state, you know, grant portion. We would start the work probably end of October and wrap up all the draft reports and tech memos by the end of February to comply with the date in the SRF loan agreement. Then we would upload all of those draft reports to the website. We could start seeing reimbursement through a disbursement request process through the State Water Board. So that's kind of like a lot of things we pulled together to take advantage of this grant funding. And the good news for the agency, it ends up saving us a little bit of capital money this year and next year. So to help make this all work, besides bundling it here, we worked with the project manager at the State Water Board to transfer funds from various tasks within that renewable energy expansion program to fund these activities. And then we asked them to, if they could amend one of the tasks for the technology assessment and also the pre-design work. And the project manager said, that looks fine. Her supervisor said, that looks fine. So she prepared the amendment to the agreement I reviewed that the other day, so now it's going to take, you know, like 6 weeks for that to go through the approval process at the state water board level.
Do we have to wait until we approve it?
We can't seek reimbursement for the technology assessment or the pre-design until the amendment's done.
But we can do the work and then apply for the grant. And
that's right.
Yeah.
And so far, we've received about $350,000 in reimbursement funds from the State Water Board.
We have what they call an ATA, an approval to award, and then we're just amending that, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually a whole agreement, with tasks and schedule. So I wrote up, you know, the new task description and
you just negotiated with Corolo. You didn't go up to bids.
That's correct.
Yeah, and why did you do that?
Because timing was, a few reasons. One, timing was very important. Because if we were to prepare an RFP for this and send it out and evaluate, that's 3 months, you know, two to 4 months, depending on how quick we did it. And then we're pushing up on that, you know, March 1st time frame in the SRF agreement. And Corolo, you know, can perform that master plan. And this is kind of building off the biogas utilization work and the digester capacity analyses in the master plan. So they're all kind of already geared up for a lot of this. And like there's a couple sub-consultants. One is ESA, the environmental engineering firm that, you know, does CEQA type work. So they're on board to do that EIR. That level work, and that may be a categorical exemption. We're hoping for that.
Well, you work with Corolo and on part of this already.
On the master plan task that, you know, led into the assessment and the pre-design work. Because remember, in that biogas utilization task that looked at various ways to use biogas, and it was recommended cogeneration engine system, or cogeneration system based on a engine technology.
Okay. All right. Would any member of the public like to speak to this? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Would anybody like to move to approve the professional services agreement with Corolo Engineers for the cogeneration system pre-design evaluation and authorize the general manager to sign the agreement?
So, I have a couple questions.
Yes.
I know we're going to jump
through.
So,
go ahead.
So if this project, this is to put in the second unit as... then we will have greater capacity for cogen, and also then we also have sort of a backup sort of system too as well to maintain these things without going down and doing everything that we just talked about in item number 8, number 7.
Yeah, that's correct. So the initial objective would be to have a new system that would be the primary system that's more about, it's like 25% more energy efficient than the current system. So we have more runtime on the same amount of biogas, which is good. Then the current system would be the backup. Then at some point in the future, if the organic waste program expanded enough to where we're maxing out the new engine, then we could talk with PG&E about what type of, you know, electrical system review they need to do to allow us to deliver more power to their system. Right now it's designed on a 750. So we could look at, okay, well, now if we have two 750s, okay, if potential for us to deliver, you know, over a megawatt to you, that would be beyond the plant demand, the low-end plant demand. Do you need any improvements to your system? And they would do, you know, the initial review, and we'd fail that. And then they'd do the supplemental review, and hopefully we'd pass that, and they'd tell us we need to do X, Y, and Z, kind of like what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And then it would take about 2 years to make the improvements, which is like happening right now.
Okay, we can sell them up to 750. Is that right?
We could deliver up to 750 right now.
Yeah.
But the most we could deliver right now beyond plant demand is like 150. But they look at what's your installed capacity, and they do the analysis based on worst case. Like we had no plant demand and we sent everything out. That's how they do their analysis, which makes sense.
That's our worst case.
And then we have to look at the MCE agreement, because that's the purchase from our existing system up to 150. Because remember we designed those brackets on that one schedule. And that's part of Corolo's work, too, is to look at, okay, if we are say we are the one in the 1750 and we're exporting, you know, 150, and now we have the opportunity to bring in, you know, some brewery wastewater, some cheese whey or whatever, to generate more biogas, to utilize that digester capacity, we could run the second engine then. So this one's maxed out, we can start this one up. Could we sell that to someone else through a separate power purchase agreement? So we're going to kind of look at least conceptually, you know, based on the language of the MCE agreement, and if that's possible. Seems like it would be.
Okay. Then as far as when you get into the actual deliverables from them, is it possible to bring it back, like on item one, the system technologies analysis and...
Oh, sure, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Do a presentation back then? Like probably a year from now or so?
Well, the technology, you know, assessment, that'll get wrapped up this fall. So that could be something like on the December agenda, we can present that. Then the pre-design will be a lot of technical stuff. So maybe it would be better after the assessment where we select the technology, then maybe once we're wrapped up, we come back with a presentation to the board about here's what the CEQA findings were, here's what the air permitting findings were, here's different options to, you know, pay for it. One item that Dean and I were talking about before was that because we have this planning and design SRF loan through the Green Project Reserve, now we're in the queue to possibly get a construction loan from them, which may be a much better rate than a revenue bond. So that we'll take a look at some of those comparisons in the financial modeling piece of this this project.
And then final question, what is going on with PG&E and our interconnection? it's been a few months since we heard.
It's moving forward. Yeah. So what happened? So just to recap, so the supplemental review said, okay, we need to install a communication or a SCADA system on an electrical component called a recloser out in their system. We needed to install a revenue meter out here, you know, at our switchgear. And then we needed to install a new ground fault detection bank. So what that does is says if there's a ground in one of the phases of the 12 kV coming in, it'll shut down our system to protect their system. And then, of course, there was fees there for testing and for reviewing the design of our improvements. So that was in our agreement with them, and you approved $80,000 to fund those improvements. So we set up an escrow account with their bank, and we moved the money there. So then we had to design our own improvements to meet their Rule 21 requirements. And these were, Corolo helped with that. So they completed the design. But then PG&E just didn't, normally you get a design. They get 90% design, you look at it, you have all these comments, and you integrate it to 100% design, and everybody's happy, and you're done. Well, it was like, you know, a 12-step process with PG&E. They reviewed this, and then we sent something back, and then there was new comments that weren't on the prior. It was a lengthy process. But ultimately, they've approved the design. Then we had a contractor that specializes in programming and installing and testing these protective relays. So we had a contract with them. So they were waiting. So with the design approved, we bought the protective relays separate. They've been programmed. They're installed, but they're not wired up yet because we weren't sure if PG&E had to test them before we did the official wiring for the official test. So that's what's happened. So the ground fault detection bank, PG&E did come out and look at that, and they said it's really old. They've never seen anything like that before, and they don't know if it's going to work or not. So we had a test scheduled where essentially they would just disconnect one of the phases of the electricity coming in the transformer and then use it to sense something's wrong, like a ground fault, and then that would send a signal to the relay, and the relay would trip, you know, and a circuit would open. We brought, you know, the design engineer here. We brought the contractor in, waited for 3 hours. PG&E didn't show up. So I contacted the project manager and said, hey, we just had to pay for all these consultants to be here to support this, and we had a flow diversion to our pond and all this extra staff work, and no one showed up. Well, they apologized, and ultimately it got rescheduled to,
Monday.
Yesterday. So three PG&E staff came out. We didn't bring everybody else out. We just, our staff. And they opened up the ground fault detection bank. It was a big closet, and they had no idea what was going on in there. So we had to pull out single line diagrams and trace things out, you know. And ultimately, they disconnected that one of those phases, and nothing happened. So we're not sure if it's the ground fault detection bank that's not working or this old relay. Because there's a new relay there to replace the old one, but it's not wired in yet. So we've instructed, you know, the contractor to wire up all the relays and to remove that one old relay. Then we'll reschedule the test. Then we'll know if that old relay was bad or the detection bank. The bad news would be if the detection tank bank's bad, then, you know, I'm not quite sure. Maybe we have to design an installation and PG&E has to approve it. Then they come out and install it. And now they do that by installing some components within their transformer, not having a separate system, which we would own. So that's in flux what's going to happen with that. On their end, they've made the determination that they don't need to install a meter. Our meter is just fine because it can be a revenue meter also. And they also discovered that somebody else made those communication improvements on the recloser, so that doesn't have to happen. So there's maybe $25,000 of that escrow money that we'll get back. So that's kind of what's happening.
Do you have an estimated completion?
we're hoping by the end of the year to know if the ground fault detection bank is okay. So I sent MCE all this information, and we have until March to get things done. And he said, well, you guys are moving it forward, and we appreciate that. So we'll definitely extend your completion dates if you need to. So that's kind of in a nutshell what's happening.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
There is item 5 here, the financial analysis. And you're going to look at your state revolving fund loans. Kind of along those lines, are we applying for any SRF loans for our CIP? Do we, you know, have we, you know, got on the waiting list for any of our CIP projects for SRF loans, especially ones that are like 3 years out? Or because a $2 million SRF loans would be fabulous. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like 2%, 1.8%. They're half of the state's GO rate, which is 1.8%. It was as low as 0.8 or 0.9. And we could do it over 20 years or 25 or 30. We would do probably 25. But
we don't, you know,
it isn't quite this agenda item, but it's, you know, the same thing.
We don't really have any really large capital projects that fit into the current SRF loan categories, which are the priority categories. It used to be where you could have collection system improvements, wastewater treatment improvements, yeah, that would qualify for SRF, but now they're more like disadvantaged community type projects, the Green Project Reserve, and there's another one. But the biggest project we have coming up is a cogen.
Yeah,
and that qualifies
under
the Green Project, yeah.
Okay.
All the other ones we have are more focused on...
like $5 million or some big number?
It's $5 million in this CIP. We'll have a much better figure once we finish the pre-design conceptual cost information.
Well, that'd be a fabulous one to get a... That's mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what item 5 is.
Yeah, that's one of the funding opportunities that they'll look at.
Okay. That's definitely worth it.
We'll keep that in mind, Finance Committee.
Oh, yeah. We're on it.
Good to hear.
Okay, I move that we approve.
Thank you. I think we've already got a motion from Michael to approve the professional services agreement with Corolla Engineers. Thank you, Tom. You're second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. That passed unanimously.
Thank you.
That covers our regular part of the agenda. Now let's move on to report on North Bay Watershed Association. Michael?
They are redoing their strategic plan. And they normally have a two-hour meeting, and they extended it to a three-hour meeting. And it's actually pretty interesting. What are they going to do over the next 5 years? What do they want to accomplish? And, you know, one of the things that's become clear is that over the 18 years, with all of these smaller little districts, it actually gives us quite a large voice with the state to
get things passed in the area that affect all of us. So there's not much to report other than we had this big long meeting and collected a lot of data from all the different agencies involved. And next month, they're going to come back with them all together with the idea of some kind of strategic plan, and then I'll be able to present to you the highlights of that strategic plan.
Do we have a project that we could get on their list? That's what they do, right? They make a list of projects and go for state bond money.
Well, it has to be the whole region. It has to be beneficial for everybody, really.
Well, like they did Napa Sands Reclamation Project. No, I guess
that. Well, they didn't pay for that.
Didn't they help them get state?
They may have gone to the state get funding.
Yeah. Well, could we list our cogen as something that, you know?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but a long time ago, when they had a different executive director, when RMC was the executive director.
Yeah.
Back from 1999 it was formed through 2008 or 9 before they brought on Harry Seradarian. North Bay Watershed actually had projects. It wasn't just, information sharing and presentations and visiting sites and things like that. They actually had projects and studies that they were doing, and there would be reports that would come out, So one that comes to mind was looking at, satellite treatment within Central Marin, where you put wastewater scalping plants and treat water upstream and provide the recycled waters like a golf course or Marin General Hospital, things like that. So they did things like that, but they haven't had their own actual projects with consultants working on projects for a long time.
They do help to fund some projects which are out there.
Yeah, they'll take some of our budget, the budget for North Bay Water, and they'll provide, a donation or some sponsorship fund to different activities. Like what you're talking about is the North Bay Water Reuse Authority.
Yeah, well, that's what that was.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You were saying that you have a bigger voice because we're a big collection of agencies. Yeah. And I was figuring, go use that voice to, for example, get, what was it, Prop 884 bond money. Remember, everybody was vying for that. And maybe it's a lead balloon. But
anything we wanted to do, I could certainly bring it to Judy, mm-hmm. put it on the agenda, present it.
I mean, would they help agencies secure SRF loans? Say, Jesus, this is a project that's in our purview.
I'm sure they would kind of, write a letter of support, but yeah. I don't think they don't have the staff. In the past, when they had RMC, they had, all the engineering and technical staff on RMC to do this type of work. But now it's really Judy, yeah. Kelly, and administrative staff, which is,
And I think, Jason, you nailed it when you said they kind of concentrate now on information sharing.
Yeah.
Is really kind of the role of the agency. That being said, I would love to see them video record their meetings and put them up on YouTube or something. There is
they
so
don't
much.
Do that.
They don't. They should.
They should.
Yeah, because evidently these topics are so
some
interesting.
Some of the topics are very interesting, and I know that has been talked about. I'll bring it up with Judy.
Yeah, I think it's time. They are a public agency. They should serve the public by making some of that information available, more readily available, I should say. My two cents. Thank you for that. Oral reports by commissioners, general manager. Any commissioners have anything to report? Okay, Jason?
Well, just a few things. One is we have a new technical service manager, Peter Kirstenmacher. So he started a couple weeks ago, and he's doing great so far. Our new electrical instrumentation technician, who's been with us for 3.5 months, Rafael Ponga, he's taking a job with Dow Chemical, so he's leaving, so we're starting recruitment for that position. And we're starting recruitment for an environmental services analyst to fill a position that's been vacant for a long time. And San Rafael Sand is advertising for an alternate CMSA commissioner. It was Al Boyle, retired from the CMSA board. And let's see here. So the project stuff is pretty, everything's good there. I guess the last thing I'd mention is that that JPA assembly bill that we've kind of talked about briefly in the past, that was signed by the governor, I think on September 29th, and the form of that changed quite a bit through the legislative, you know, process. So ultimately, what now what it says is that if a JPA member agency decide to terminate a JPA agreement or dissolve the JPA agency, then the agencies have to determine how the unfunded liability for pension is allocated amongst the members. And if they can't figure that out, then the CalPERS Board of Administration will figure it out for them. So that's what that law says. So as we talked about in the past, Sanitary District Number 2's attorneys had quite a few comments on, you know, the new, well, not the new, but the 2018 JPA. And so we've looked at those at the manager level. You know, we thought that our JPA was just fine. We also thought their comments were fine too, but we don't necessarily need to bring it back to all the boards. But we thought maybe there is a reopener there just to strengthen some of the language in one of the whereas sections where we talk about, you know, how the 79 JPA was amended and then it was reviewed and revised. Kind of strengthen that so that way anybody that looks at the JPA in the future realizes that this truly is just an amended and restated JPA. It wasn't like a brand new JPA, so we didn't dissolve the prior one and create a new one. So we thought, the managers thought, well, if the member agency boards wanted to, we could open up the JPA and strengthen that language. And then if we did that, we could add a provision, you know, referencing this state law, so that way if, you know, JPA terminated, we could, the members know that they would have to figure out how the allocation of the unfunded liabilities of CMSA's pension. So that's something that that's kind of in flux right now. We haven't seen SE2 attorneys' revisions to the 2018 document. So once we look at those at the manager level, we'll talk about it. We'll see which ones make sense. Then the managers may come back to the individual board, with some type of recommendation. So that's
First
all I have.
Amendment.
Thank you. That is it for our regular agenda. We will be adjourning to closed session for a public employee performance evaluation. General Manager.